Okay.
Yes. Okay. So the first chapter is pretty much a historiographical review that's pretty much set from 2013 when I started, roughly around that time when I started thinking about how my PhD was going to look and how it was shaped about the events in Brazil during the Confederations Cup, but also focusing on what it meant for Mexico as a developing country, in that case, more a third world country, using the jargon of the time, and what they were trying to do with the Olympic Games. And what I do, and I say this in the introduction, is pretty much trying to play with scales. And this means like taking an international approach, but as the chapters, as I continue with the chapters, that's the third, fourth, and fifth, they start zooming in. Like if it was a funnel focusing more, less on the international sphere, more on a national than the local, it's very much focused on Mexico City. And that's precisely what I wanted to do, is really look at the reception of the Olympic Games. And in hindsight, I think it could have been stronger in terms of, now that I'm more in the anthropological side of research, giving it much more, more interviews to really capture more of those complexities. I think that could have strengthened it. Yet, I still think that there are some contributions to trying to play with scales, asking different questions to the archive, not only trying to understand the government's perspective, but also how, through what people were saying, the letters they were writing to the government, you can also see different ways of reacting to these nation-building strategies. So the second chapter is mainly trying to set the 1968 Olympic Games in context, trying to say that they were part of a global Cold War in which Mexico tried to be a key player in the region. And that's mainly the argument, trying to provide a framework for other studies to try to understand what a country tries to do when they host something like the World Cup or the Olympic Games. The third chapter is mainly about the student movement. The student movement did not begin as that's the 1968 student movement, which took place in Mexico from July to October. That was the busiest period of the movement. And it didn't really begin as a struggle against the Olympics, even though like the phrase suggests that it is against the Olympics. But if you see the formal demands of the student movement, it's nothing. It's more for civil, like political liberties. However, as you can see in the image that I chose on the left, they did appropriate the imagery, all the images that were created to try to promote Mexico as developed, Mexico as modern, and they criticized the government with this. So it was a bit of a contrast to try to show how these global international objectives of the government, how they were interpreted by some groups within the citizenry, mainly students. And it was thinkers, writers, it was mainly that sector that was reacting to what the government was trying to do with the Olympic Games. The fourth chapter, I try to focus more on how soft power is exercised, like to say very broadly. And how there's certain dynamics, among them silence, that was providing a certain, to perpetuate the status quo. And that's something that I was very interested to see how at times, and this is nothing new for you, the IOC, FIFA can really play the silent card to get some, to have things continue if their projects are not being threatened. So that was mainly what I was trying to do with the fourth chapter, and try to think about the ways in which not taking action is a form of action. Like there isn't a bystander position as we would expect. It's more that is a political positioning, that what the apparent silence. And that could happen in other events. Like I was thinking more, I don't deal with that in the book. But sort of what has happened in China with the Winter Olympic Games, with the Summer Olympic Games, and how their positioning is completely different given their economic and political status in world politics, which it seems like it's no longer the IOC's event. It's more China owning the IOC events. And they sort of had this positioning of stay out, these are domestic politics. Whereas in the 60s, it was completely different. It was more the IOC saying, you are hosting the Olympic Games, this is what should be done. So I think there are some interesting comparisons to do, but this is outside the scope of the book, but sort of to some topics to think about. The fifth chapter is more, I think that was the chapter that I enjoyed most, precisely because I was, well, I'm very interested in senses and emotions in history. And it was a way to try to capture the political sort of consequences of emotions and how you could drive people emotionally, either to reject something, to accept something. And that was what I tried to do with the fifth chapter, which focuses a lot. Well, that's the one on the Olympic Games per se, from 12 to 27th of October, and how through emotions, there was international solidarities being created. That means something with the civil rights movement, there were some traces because there was this resentment, this anger against each, like mainly towards institutions, whether the government, the International Olympic Committee. There was this attempt to create a solidarity. In the end, nothing formal came out of that, but at least there was this communication to try to express this content. And that sort of led me to tie everything together, was that it was that emotional sort of communication of what Mexico was that tried to be the exception, what made Mexico stand out, because it hadn't invested as much as Japan or as Italy had done, well, Tokyo and Rome. But what really tried to stand out, and you could really see it in the film, which is the last product of the 1968 Olympic Organizing Committee, it ends with the scene of saying how it was the festive side of Mexico that made the uniqueness to these Olympic Games, that all formality was broken, and what really stood out was the festive side of Mexico and its welcoming nature, which I explain in the third chapter, second chapter, is that it was staged, right? There was this appeal for hospitality. There was a constant appeal for hospitality from Mexico. And that sort of marked the sixth chapter, which is mainly about what happened in terms of political participation with the Olympic Games and the student movement, how that started shaping the Olympic discourse for one hand. They also started changing how the citizenry organized after 1968, not really because of the Olympics, but it was focused on this sort of international attention and with the withdrawal, like different consequences arose from that. And that's pretty much the book. So I could stop sharing and then leave it to Claire to hear her comments.
Well, thank you very much, Axel, for this presentation, which gives credit to your book, because I was very glad to finally see this dove with the knife, because you mentioned it a lot in the book, and I was very glad to see how it looked like. Just to start, actually, I really enjoyed reading your book. It's really well written. You give a lot of information. It's really, also, I'm not familiar with Mexican historiography. I know a bit of Olympic history, but not that much. So, and it's really, you really bring these various trends of historiography very well, and you blend them quite nicely. And it's quite, as a newcomer to the field, it's very nice to be able to be going alongside, going through the book with you, taking us with it. And it's quite also an impressive work, because I think it's quite it's not so common, and you mentioned it in the introduction and you mentioned it in your presentation, but very often mega events are indeed analyzed, perceived, studied from the vantage point of international connection, from the vantage point of international organization, and so on, from this very top-down narrative. And you manage to have this very this blended approach, I would say, taking the student movements, taking into account the people who were from Mexico, who were part into the setup, the staging of these games, and also, but not erasing the presence of the IOC members and so on, and you really make them work together and show that it was that everyone was part of all this story, and in a very dramatic way and in a very violent way at times. And in this perspective, you insist a lot on the student movement protest, but when you show how they interacted, for instance, with a very famous Black Power fist raised by the African American athletes, it's quite powerful because you really show these international connections, which are how people are perceived from one hand or the other. And for this Tommy Smith, John Carlos story, we always have the American side of the story. So it's quite interesting to see how leftist people from Mexico would have seen it back then and have what is their perception of this kind of event. And I think you use a lot the term of oasis in the book to mention how the games were staged to the world as an oasis and as a political oasis. And it's quite interesting because you really show that it was both true and not true, that in a way it was, because even the students, the protests stopped and so on, but it was not true because it was of course part of a global, more global history. And I think this this is quite interesting, the way you use an emic term to really show the what's beneath, like to lift the cover in a way. And you use a lot, I think your key concept like citizenry, which I was not so familiar with, is really interesting in order to have this broader idea of what, and it echoes a lot of debates about what it is to be a citizen. Is it just because, are you a citizen just because you have legal rights or voting rights? Of course not, as you show, it's because you take a stand, you have an opinion about what's happening, or maybe you don't, but why don't you? I think it's always good when you read a book and you have a lot of food for thought. So, and your book really did the job in this perspective. So I was really glad to read it. And I think I was particularly interested in something because it really echoed my own perspectives on a recent debate at CEOGS, which is the politics of emotions that you mentioned. And you draw from Sarah Ahmed, I believe, to do so. And I think I was so happy actually to read a sport history book drawing from her. And I think it might be quite, because to draw back a bit, I think there was a discussion when I was in Lausanne back a week ago about the importance of taking into account the history of emotion in sports. And it was Patrick Last who mentioned it, and he mentioned it again when I presented my PhD at CEOGS webinar. And I think it might be very interesting if you could share maybe a bit more about why did you choose Sarah Ahmed? Well, I'm totally on board with it, but I think it would be nice, good for the group if you could share a bit on why her work brings something to the history of sports, the history of global events, and why this idea of politics of emotion, it might be very interesting in order to unpack what's happening when it comes to sports. And I don't know if you want to jump on that, maybe.
Yes, I think you really nailed it when you focus on when you